Chapter 54. Failure, the elfin captain said, the disappointment clear in his voice. Charlie had, upon his humiliating beatdown in the eating hall, been summoned before the slaver boss, and Tour was not pleased. I didn't want to get in a fight. Charlie rubbed the sore spot on his shoulder, where the ground had done its best to remove his arm from his torso. He attacked me. What else was I supposed to do? Captain Tour fixed him with a long, unblinking stare. You were supposed to fight better, he finally said. You were supposed to win.
Better? The guy was cheating. That wasn't a fair fight. He had magic. It wasn't a slop, but he had something.
He did not have magic. He used magic. There is a huge difference between the two. The green-skinned man pushed up his sleeve, revealing a slim bracelet similar to what his attacker had worn. At first glance, it was nothing of note, but then Charlie saw the fine symbols etched in the metal. This is a Conus. It is what defeated you today. Charlie squinted his eyes, but the writing refused to make itself any clearer for his human mind.
So it's like a slap.
Not unlike one, but while it can be charged with magical energy, much as a slap is, the Conus is a focusing device. For gladiator trainees with a potential of power in their bodies, it can help them tap into that magic. The man you fought, he possessed the tiniest amount of magic in his body, yet it was the Conus that held his edge, a slight bit of power stored in the item. It was that, not his own middling powers, that he wielded against you, a much larger opponent, to devastate in effect. Okay, it wasn't his magic, but it was still an outside advantage. And if you were a gladiator, you would have known the counterspells to negate that advantage. Charlie suddenly realized what was happening. That wasn't a random attack, was it? I saw you with that man, the one I spoke to yesterday. He said he wanted me to be a gladiator. Captain Tour did something he rarely did. He smiled. Very observant. It is your sharp wits that led me to believe you would perform better when faced with an asymmetric attack. I was mistaken, and it cost me a great deal of money. A flash of anger flooded Charlie's veins, but he wisely kept it inside. So long as he wore that collar, he was at Tour's mercy.
The whole thing was a setup, a test.
Yes, and you failed quite miserably.
Well, good. You were going to trade me off to some guy to be a punching bag for a bunch of muscle-headed lunks?
No. I was going to make a hefty profit off of you, and in turn you would learn to wield a Conus, and possibly a small slop as you developed into a more skilled fighter. It is a good living for those who excel.
And that's not going to be me, Charlie said firmly.
Captain Tour smiled. It was not a warming expression. You have proven to be a disappointment, a financial drain, and more trouble than you're worth, Tour said with a tired sigh. If you will not fight, then you will find value for me, one way or another. Charlie didn't like the sound of that one bit. Their ship took off late that evening. Whatever deal had been in the works had gone south, and Charlie had a sinking feeling he knew what the cause of that was. They traveled for several days, and though there was no vibration to tell just how fast they were going, it seemed to him that the Drooks were working overtime. Wherever they were going, Captain Tour seemed to be in a hurry, though not so much of a hurry that he'd spend power jumping to the next planet. Gradually, the light outside the ship from the new star system made its way in through the window, and the reaction from Tuk-Tuk led Charlie to believe it was a bad omen. What is it, Tuk? The blue-skinned man quietly rocked on his bunk, his eye stalks darting about in fear.
We going to dark place, Charlie. We going to where Wampa come from. We going to Black Sun system.
Charlie had seen what the one Wampa he'd encountered had been capable of many worlds ago. He had terrified Tour's men, and they were exceptional fighters. He knew the same man wouldn't be on this random planet. But the thought that there were more deadly creatures like him out there was unsettling, to say the least. And they were going to a world where they thrived.
A heavy, oppressive feeling crept into the ship, despite whatever magical shielding they had in place. The black sun's powerful rays penetrated one and all, the light passing ultraviolet spectrum. When they touched down on the small planet, they stepped out into a dark world illuminated entirely by magical light. Tuk-Tuk may have been exaggerating when he said magic users were a rarity on such planets. Fully powered Wampa, perhaps, but there were myriad other varieties of aliens with abilities not seen on other worlds. The planet was thick with magical energy, and it hardly seemed you could walk 10 feet without stumbling into another enchanted device or system. Even the sewage control was handled by magic, some creatures' powers being used to vanish waste from the toilet systems, perhaps teleported to some distant, and likely very upset, land. The porter slaves all lined up at the usual spot near the ship's exit, ready to hoist their big loads to their backs. One by one, they set out into the market, following Sour and Dolomir. Charlie, however, was given a much smaller pack, which was still sizable, but not nearly as immense as he'd grown accustomed to. They set out into the market, and Charlie noted Captain Tour himself was accompanying the group. "Kikaram," the captain grunted, violently blasting a group of ruffians from their path before they could draw their concealed weapons. "Keep moving," he growled, keeping his slop ready. Charlie realized Sour and Dolomir also had their slops firmly in hand. This planet was not a friendly one, and the bazaar they were heading into seemed just the sort of place one would go if looking for trouble. Conscious of his surroundings, Charlie kept pace with the others, staying close to the safety of the group. "Kikaram," he quietly muttered to himself, wondering what exactly it meant as he committed the word to his mental list with a helpful tune. The little school trick he used with most of the magical commands he had learned thus far was doing the trick. A good memory and a knack for mnemonic phrases had served him well, and now he had quite the collection of little tunes compiled in his head, each full of dangerous magical words. "At least I won't forget them," he thought gratefully. "In theory, Ulama Tengope," he whispered, but his collar stayed firmly attached. In all likelihood, even if he had a slop, he couldn't have made the band release. Well, it was worth a try. Deeper they traveled into the bazaar, and heavy magic was everywhere. Goods and wares, illuminated by spells, and castings of a dozen types of magic could be had at any one of the stalls and marketplace tents. Charlie even saw what could pass as a flying carpet, though the airborne conveyance was more of an upholstered sled than an actual woven rug. "Stop gawking," Tor said. "We're not here for sightseeing." But there were so many varieties of pale alien life to see. Wampa were plentiful, though none had that menacing look of the one Charlie had encountered many worlds back. These seemed to be normal people, albeit very pale ones, with slightly protruding spinal ridges. Other types of aliens were there as well, most of which he had seen on other worlds. What was interesting was he found it relatively easy to spot the expats who had taken up residence from the mere visitors. It was in the skin and the eyes, the former becoming paler and paler, the latter wider of pupil from the endless darkness. A sharp, invisible tug on his collar pulled him from the others. "Tuk-Tuk, what's happening?" His friend turned to look, but was hurried along with the other porters by Sour, who shot a dark smile Charlie's way. "We have a different destination." Captain Tour looked around, then, once his bearings were straight, headed farther into the market, the invisible tug on Charlie's collar urging him to follow. He quickly fell in just behind the wiry alien, ashamed at himself for feeling the need of his captor for protection, yet involuntarily flinching as he heard unworldly shrieks and bellows from the mid-sized arena looming ahead. "Where are you taking me? And what was that noise?" More screaming cries that sounded like a beast had swallowed broken glass filled the air. A chorus of them, he realized, accompanied by a high-pitched buzzing sound like a swarm of flies. Tour regarded him with a contemptuous look, then smiled. "Where I am taking you is to your new owners." "Wait, new owners? What are you talking about?" "Precisely that," I tire of you, and your unwillingness to be of greater profit to me has left little option. He looked ahead to the building from which the shrieks were emanating. As for what made those cries, you will see soon enough.